Thank you. Welcome back to the show. And Moody Manitoba, of course, indicates that it's time for Consider This here on Northumberland 89.7. Joining me in the studio is Rob Washburn. He is the professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. Rob, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Always a pleasure. And our special guest today is Deputy Chief of Police for the Cobourg Police Service, Paul Vandegraaff. Paul, welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much.
Now, this is the first time you've been on my show, but you have been in the studio before, so that's good.
Couple different shows, great opportunities. I appreciate the invite back.
Well, thanks for coming in. Today we're going to talk about the proposed budget that's been presented to Town Council. Is that correct, Rob?
Well, we're talking about the new 3-year business plan for the Cobourg Police Service, which got presented, I understand, recently at Council.
Sure.
So could you maybe just give us a bit of background first about how we got to this point and the process by which you created the report?
Absolutely. Business planning is obviously not something that's high on the topic of a lot of people's mouths and lips, but a business plan is something that police services across the province are actually mandated to have, and it's actually the police services board's business plan. So they're the ones that own the direction. So what this does is, in any police service, but specifically here in Cobourg, is it sets the direction for the next 3 years. So from this document, we will set our budgets, we'll set our priorities, we'll set our goals and aspirations. And coming from my previous employer in Belleville, I had some great experience with the business plan and business planning processes. So when coming to Cobourg here in November, they were just finishing what they call the environmental scan, or the community piece. So they'd done the coffee chats, they'd done some internal surveys, mm-hmm. some online surveys, and we actually hired an outside firm. So it was truly independent of the police. So we're not fudging the numbers, if you will.
And what was the public participation like in that process?
Oh, geez, well over 400 online app surveys done, which was a really great representation of the community of our size. The membership, we had like 80% internal membership commitment to internal members saying this is the way we think the police service should move. So overall, we're very, very pleased with the inputs we got.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that, we put that to our structure and set what we determined in this case were pillars and supports. That there are pillars to law enforcement and community safety in our community, and then there are supports to make those pillars successful.
Now, I understand that there were 5 key things that citizens identified as being policing concerns. Maybe you could talk a bit about those.
Yeah, absolutely. As normal, it generally rolls out that traffic safety or road safety ends up to being number one. It doesn't surprise me. It's generally what affects everybody. Drugs and drug-related behavior was second. Break and enters always tend to usually hit in the middle part.
Mm-hmm.
Youth crimes and then property damage. With mental health hitting the top 5, which is really kind of interesting because we've known it's been a problem mm-hmm. in policing for a long time. However, to hear the community say, the visibility and the issues of mental health are foremost in our minds. That was really, really remarkable. So I was really, really impressed.
That kind of gets to the question I was going to ask, quite frankly, was there anything on the list that surprised you from this consultation? And obviously that
not surprise in that I know that the issues around people in our community who suffer from mental illness, and there just are not the supports anymore that there used to be for people. And that's put a greater drain on police departments across the world, if you will, but for the community to recognize
exactly.
that was kind of a really heartwarming, actually surprise mm-hmm. in the sense that everyone's recognizing the same thing. So together we have to work on ensuring that anybody in our community who is suffering a mental illness receives the support, the direction, the assistance, and are in a safe environment to which to live. And that's really key to us.
So the mental health piece, though, is really interesting because a lot of times people phone 911 when there's an incident and then
sure.
the police go out and deal with it. And we've seen Toronto's had these kinds of problems.
Yep.
And then, you know, you almost take on a different role. It's not really about law enforcement. It's almost like social work or intervention work that you're trying
sure,
to do.
Sure. And that's part of the change we're bringing to the police service here, the Chief Lou and I, in that we're trying to get the officers to get into this idea that they're not law enforcement officers. Those days are gone. If you look at statistically across Canada and across the world, severe crime indexes are plummeting.
Right.
So one would suggest then, well, why aren't police services decreasing their budgets, decreasing their size? Well, because the other issues in our communities are actually increasing at a greater rate than severe crime is decreasing.
Right.
So that is, so when you have downloading of services, we have lack of availability for services. So you have people living in the community today who might have been in some form of residential support system 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When they're stuck at 2 o'clock in the morning, who do they call? Well, they call 911. And that moment of crisis for that person, it is integral that our officers treat these people with respect because they deserve it, because they're just a member of our community. They treat the needs of that person, and that they assess a community safety ideal, and that let's create a safety environment. And that's why larger services are moving into the programs where they have a mental health worker, crisis worker in the car mm-hmm. with a police officer, and they're going right to the incident at hand and solving it for good. And that's what we're talking about. Now, we're too small. We don't have the incidence of this to require a coast unit or there's different names for them across mm-hmm. the world. But it is definitely something we train our officers. I have right now three officers of the service are in Ontario Shores working hand in hand with their staff to recognize the impacts of mental illness and the symptoms and symptomologies of it. So we take it very, very seriously. And that also carries off to the mental health of our officers.
So you're moving happily. I'm happy to report here, listeners, that we're obviously moving from a law enforcement stance to more of a peace officer stance, right?
Yeah.
The role there to keep
the
peace.
Yeah, we like to say we're community service officers. However, community service officers do in fact enforce laws. They mm-hmm. write lots of tickets.
Absolutely.
They make lots of arrests, and they enforce the laws. But our focus is community safety. Everything we do, every dollar we spend, every direction the board asks the chief and I to take, it's all with the idea of community safety in mind. As we were looking for a holistic view of community safety, and we're going to work with the ER docs and ER nurses. We're going to work with the Cornerstone. We're going to work with Transition House. We're going to work with Salvation Army. We're looking at a holistic approach to reduce crime. And I got to tell you right now, for me, one of the things is I'm going to attack over the next little while literacy. I truly believe if we can make a strong impact on literacy, then we are going to affect a holistic effect on crime. Because it ties into kids going to school, not going to school, being truant, mm-hmm. Maybe taking the wrong path because they're having issues with literacy. I don't know what the literacy rates are. I've spoken very arbitrarily to a staff member who has some good education background, and they tell me there's a bit of a problem. But we'll look into that. That's where this is the new thinking of our police officers, and we were so proud to launch, and we call it the book. It's in the book.
But
the breakfast clubs. We want to tear down this idea that, oh my God, the police, be afraid, be afraid, be mm-hmm. afraid. And that's tough with some of the news that every day I turn the news on and I just cringe, right? Oh no, not another incident. Oh God, not another incident. But so we're having our officers go to the breakfast clubs in the schools and just hang out for half an hour. And the kids are bewildered and surprised. And over the next few weeks, it'll become cool. And it'll be neat, and it'll be interesting. So there's lots of stuff that we're doing, and we're very fortunate here in Coburg in that we don't have a call load that makes the guys go from call to call to call to call to call, which really makes it tough for a police service to address some of the root causes of crime when you're just racing from call to call mm-hmm. to call. So fortunately, we have the opportunities to do some really cool stuff.
One of the things that in the past has been big for this town has been the idea of the future of the force and amalgamation with Port Hope. And there was a whole bunch of talk in the past.
Right.
One of the things that's a hallmark about this is while you talk about a lot of community liaison and working with other organizations, one of the things you don't see is what is the future of our police force? Is it going to be independent? Or are we looking at a West Northumberland police force? Or are we looking at Port Hope? What's different about this time when you're creating a business plan that hasn't been made part of it?
First off, that's a huge question. I'm going to be right clear with you that we work with all partners. I'm going to work with the Port Hope Police Service, and we've created new partnerships there. We're going to work with the Ontario Provincial Police. I left a meeting at the police station where there was a joint meeting with the Ontario Provincial Police. And our criminals don't know boundaries. So the minute police services start operating in silos, they've won. So whether it's the Port Hope Police Service, whether it's the Coburg Police Service, whether it's the Ontario Provincial Police, or whether it's whatever the West Northumberland Police Service, it doesn't matter. We're out here for creating a community response to crime and community safety. There is no discussion in here about amalgamations of police services. Not what a police service ever strikes out to do. A lot of communities go through the OPP costings, and Commissioner Lewis, now retired, but Commissioner Hawks will come right up and say, we're not in the business of putting other municipal police services out of business. Those are municipal decisions, mm-hmm. and they're generally driven by economics. And I truly believe the Coburg Police Service, as would I think Chief Wood and Port Hope, would say that we run very, very efficient police services. We are honest to the taxpayers' dollar, that we don't know what the economies of scale would be, but we don't think that there's any need currently to go down that path. And it's outside of our world. That's a regional thing. That's a municipal councils, mm-hmm. county council. That's the decision that really needs to be happening there, and it's better to keep the police services out of it in a sense and let us do our work. Let us focus on community health and community safety, and at the end of the day, what the shoulder flash is, when we got to come together to work, I don't care if it's a paramedic, I don't care if it's a firefighter, I don't care if it's a Port Hart Police Service or a Durham guy driving through on his way to Kingston. If our guys need help, all hands on deck.
So one of the things that we see in this report is a number of goals and timelines.
Sure.
What are the big highlights out of the goals that you've set for yourself in this plan? What really pops out for you?
Well, let me say, so when I got here, it was great because all the raw data, all that hard work had been done in a sense. So the staff at the Coburg Police Service and myself had a great team, and we worked with every member of the police service. We had focus groups. We brought them through a process. And the reason there are goals with timelines is that often when organizations, policing or not, do strategic plans. We create the book. Whew, that work is done. Put the book on the shelf and let's not go at it. I like the report card system. So I made a commitment to the chief that I will stand before council in 12 or 18 months and I will report back on how we're doing at meeting these goals. So I believe the goals are very attainable. Mm-hmm. I believe that there's all things that we can do to set a base standard of how we'll measure our performance and our expectation. And then that speaks to qualifying and certifying and appraising the chief and I as how we're doing in meeting our goals. So what stands out, I really like the pillars and the way we have this designed. I like how we're looking at efficiencies within the technology of the police service and what can be done to free up the officers' time so that they have more available time on patrol. We call that discretionary time. I want to increase the discretionary time of the officers on patrol so that they can do more community engagement. Right. And that's the biggest goal. And it's reflected several ways throughout the plan. We talk about in community engagement, getting in the schools, getting in the seniors' homes. We recognize the demographics of this community is a more senior community. So we have to be representative to that, and we have to have programs in place, and we have to be partnered with the Alzheimer's Society. We need to be partnered with the right agencies so that we can provide a great community service to that population.
So give us an example of how a piece of technology or technology that you talk about will create that kind of discretionary time that you're addressing.
So again, I'm very, very fortunate in that when I came to Coburg, they had a lot of the raw tools, purchasing a lot of the raw tools because they had great chiefs and deputy chiefs prior to Chief Liu and myself who had a kind of similar belief. And they just needed a bit of a kickstart when I got here. So one of the great ideas is some of the officers may not agree with the technology, but that's okay. Change is tough. But Dragon Naturally Speaking is a dictation software program that was created for the doctors. The doctors have been using this for years. Mm-hmm. So versus sitting there, because the officers do direct entry of their reports, and reporting is very important in police work, they spend a lot of time typing. And not all of us are very good keyboarders. So we two fingers, and a thumb if you're really clever,
yeah.
Right? That time, so an officer goes out on a call. The call takes, I don't know, half an hour to complete. The secondary paperwork can be another half an hour. So really, it starts really multiplying, and if there's an arrest made. So what we've done is we've incorporated the Dragon Speak software, which is already in place here. We're increasing training, and we're rolling that out so the officers can actually dictate right in the car into the newly revised computer laptops we're putting in the cruisers that the cruisers had, but we're just tricking them up a little bit. And they'll dictate. The report will appear right in the system. So it's not typing, it's blah, blah, blah. It's safe, it's ergonomically correct. They mm-hmm. don't have to type on a laptop in a car, and they can be out visibly at the waterfront, at a ball diamond, and it'd be look like, what's that officer doing there? Well, he's dictating a few reports, and then the reports seamlessly get into the system, approved by supervisors, and they're out in the community doing that. We're having civilianization of certain tasks. So versus having a police officer take an arrest and a bail brief from beginning to end, which could be 6.5 hours or longer to complete, we're getting the officer to get the reports on, and we're having civilian staff actually compile the court brief. So we have standardization of process, we have better quality assurance, we have every brief looking the same, and it gets the officers back on patrol. And that's the idea, is that cops, everybody, when I go to classrooms and they say, hey, it's a cop, and somebody inevitably will say, oh, you shouldn't call him that, it's rude. And the joke always is, if you can tell me what COP stands for, you can use it. And the answer is constable on patrol. It's simple. It's a simple acronym. And that's what I want. I want my constables on patrol. I don't want them in the station. I don't want them hanging around. I want them in the coffee shops talking mm-hmm. to people. I want them in the schools talking to people. I want them into the seniors' homes, picking up a chessboard, picking up a deck of cards, walking the boardwalk. We've created a mobile community mobilization unit for the beach patrol this summer. You're going to see four officers down there. We know this is, as I moved here, it was defined as Little Miami down there at times. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to make sure we have the right officers in shorts and running shoes, mm-hmm. approachable to the kids, having fun, doing all the things that we need to do.
But isn't this sort of a back to the future kind of thing where, you know, I mean, this is something that was very traditional. I mean, the cops would walk up and down the street and everybody knew who they were and you knew the neighborhood, you talked to everybody.
There's nothing we do that's new. The technology may be new, but the practices mm-hmm. are the same. And it was funny, I just left a meeting at the station and there was an officer who's doing some part-time work for us who actually started his policing career in 1971. And he actually said to me, he says, not much has changed.
Exactly.
Everything's cyclical, right? Everything is cyclical, and that's exactly it. Technology put the guys off the street into the cars. Now I got to get them out of the cars with technology, so it's just confusing.
Well, you know what? I've talked to a lot of business owners, and my wife was, you know, a business owner with me downtown, and one of the things that we always talked about was we didn't see the police. There was a pretty much low visibility when it came to seeing either officers on patrol or out of their cars, and that's the one thing I've been hearing for the last probably 7 years. We need to get more. You know, there needs to be a better familiarity between the citizenry and the police service. There needs to be, because right now, or for the last several years anyway, the last decade, what we've seen is sort of a confrontational atmosphere between youth and the police service. It was almost as if the police existed just to keep the kids in check. And what I'm hearing from you is something completely different.
Right. Everybody hates the word foot patrol if you're in policing. Foot patrol. So we don't call it foot patrol. We call it patrol on foot. And when I taught at Loyalist College, I taught the community policing course, and there used to be police officers on patrol. They didn't have portable radios. They had call boxes on the street. You go to mm-hmm. the call box, pick it up if the light was flashing. We got cars. We got cooler cars. We got faster cars. We got cooler kit. We got cooler equipment. We got better guns. We got better this. And that's all good, and I'm all about the safety of the officers. But it insulated them from the public in a lot of ways.
Right.
And put them in the car. So we got to use technology now to get them back out of the cars. And I'm just guilty of it myself. So I was a patrol officer the bulk of my career. So I know what it, especially if the call load is heavy and you're going from call to call and you don't have that time. We are on patrol on foot in the right areas, not just because this is the key street to walk. No, it's where we're required. So if we're having a social disorder issue in a housing complex area, we're going to patrol by foot there. If we have, and downtown is a busy spot, mm-hmm. and we are going to patrol by foot downtown, and our officers do it daily, every day. They're right down there, patrol by foot every day. But then I always say patrol by foot includes mountain bike because it's very approachable, motorcycle because it's very approachable. And that's what it's all about. It's about mobilizing our folks at the right time to do the right work to have the greatest impact.
Are you getting any feedback thus far on any of the changes that have already occurred?
Dr. Linda Duxbury from Carleton University is a very bright lady, and she's done a lot of work about the economics of policing and everything else. Mm-hmm. And she said two things. She said, this is what you need to know about police officers going way back. She said, police officers hate the way it is, and then the second thing they hate is change. So change is tough, change is difficult. So we're in that any change model you look at, we're in that state of change right now, and there is a bit of change, and there is a bit of unrest and in a sense of angst about what are we doing, why are we doing, and how mm-hmm. are we doing. But it's okay. I grew up through the community policing thing, and I was a community police officer, and that was a big thing. And oh my God, the sky is falling. You know, it just passed. It just went beyond us. And now we're and that's old news. And this change will come and go too.
Absolutely. And again, what I was asking about was from the citizenry. Have you been hearing anything from the DBIA, for instance? Because I know the BIA was always concerned about having an increased police presence on foot. Are you hearing from them? Are they getting accolades as
well? Well, we heard from them. We heard from the citizenry. We heard from the public that it actually said we want this to be done, so we're doing this. And that's why we're out there. We're not doing this because the chief and I woke up and decided this was a good idea. We're doing this because this is what we
it wasn't. It wasn't just a dream you had one
that's
day.
That's it.
Well, we got a caller on the line. I'm going to take that call. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi.
Hi.
Is this Teresa?
Teresa Rickery.
Oh, hi, Teresa. How you doing?
Good. How are you? I just happened to be listening to the radio, and I heard Deputy Chief Vandergraaf speaking about the policies and the way they're moving forward with their new business plan and their patrol by foot, is that what it is?
That's right, Teresa. Thanks for that. We'll keep saying that. It'll become smooth
patrol
shortly.
Patrol by foot, yes. Anyway, I just wanted to commend you on such an excellent job that the Coburg Police did on their business plan. It was very well done. And also on your patrol by foot. I'm just grabbing stuff for my kids. Just the initiative for patrol by foot. in downtown Cobourg, it has already made a huge difference. We see the police now on a regular basis. I personally enjoy speaking to them, getting to know them. I know the other business owners downtown do. And I just think it's an excellent initiative, and I look forward to seeing more as we go forward.
Well, all right. Thank you for your call, Teresa.
Thanks, Teresa.
Okay, bye.
So there you have it. So that's one person, and she's a business owner. She's not just a member of council. She owns two businesses in the downtown.
That's right.
And as the former chair of the BIA, that was something that I know they were looking for, was this increased presence. And it's an increased positive presence, which is something that a lot of people will find.
Well, yeah, and it's funny because the officers are down there and they're enforcing bylaws, which means parking tickets, and they're laying other tickets. So there is a bit of a mixed reaction. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? No, you know what? The community has expectations. The communities have standards. And part of a policing responsibility is to enforce those standards.
So, absolutely.
So if someone's unhappy about an officer giving them a parking ticket, it's an unfortunate circumstance. I understand no one likes to get a parking ticket. And all I can generally say is, thank God you're not Toronto. It would have been a $300 ticket and they would have towed your car here. I think it's $30 or $40. So and it's all
right.
Perspective.
One of the things you talk about in the report is revitalization of the volunteer programs at the police service. Can you talk a bit about what that means and what's
absolutely
happening there?
Absolutely. They say about police officers are the biggest street gang in the world, and it probably is true, but we're not going to be successful without the strong help of our volunteers. And Cobourg Police Service volunteer group was very vibrant and very, very, very strong. And like everything in any volunteer agency, and I've been involved in many non-police volunteer agencies as a director on boards as well as a volunteer coach, convener, all that stuff, it comes and goes in waves.
Mm-hmm.
We've made a commitment to we're going to revive our volunteers, and our volunteers are so like amazing. And our police association is fantastic in that they work collectively and they don't get hung up about silly things sometimes. Our volunteers work right in our police station and greeting people. They do presentations. We have a volunteer who actually is an expert in fraud because he worked with phone busters in North Bay and he lives right here in this town. So I can have a police officer read a fraud booklet and go talk about fraud, or I can send a volunteer with our volunteer outfit on and our uniform on and have a great presentation. So we're out there recruiting. We've had a couple of recruiting drives. We've dedicated one part-time resource civilian full-time, and Dave Ashcroft is to run the troops, and they have meetings. And about every week now, I kick on an email, and I get these two new volunteers are joining us. And our goal is to truly engage them and get them involved in our programs and our community safety message. And they are, and they're buying in, and they're getting involved, and our numbers are growing. And our task is to keep them truly engaged and being true members of us, with us. And that's why when I define a member of our police service, it's every paid sworn officer, it's every paid civilian officer, and it's every volunteer. That's the members of our Cobourg Police Service.
And what about the youth? I know that's an extension of that.
Yeah, the Youth and Policing Initiative is a fantastic idea. Chief Liu is obviously a strong proponent of that provincially. And what we have is we have periods where we have the after-school program throughout the winter. And then in the summer, we employ the yippies. They called the yippies, and they're out there and they do everything. You know, they're polar dipping. They're doing everything out there, and it's a great opportunity for young people to be exposed to policing, to get a taste for it, to develop those skill sets and to that conscience to become a police officer maybe, and for us to and they get a small job for them, right? So some youth employment, which is important too. And yeah, at the end of the day, we hopefully can influence some kids positively. And the goal behind the program is not to find those high performers, those superstar kids that are going to go off to the fanciest school that you can possibly name, but maybe those kids who are kind of maybe stuck and they don't know which way to go in the sense of, do I not do anything? Do I go to college? And maybe they're just kind of drifting through school. And our goal is to find the gems, those gems in the rough, or those rough jewels, and buff them up and shine them up and help them with their self-esteem and get them to be productive people. And that's the goal behind the Yippie program.
Well, and something else that you folks are doing over at the Cobourg Police Service is you're engaging on social media. I mean, I follow you on Twitter.
He's my Twitter master, I tell you.
I get his tweets all the time. And you know, you're trying to engage volunteerism through that process as well. I understand you have a Facebook page too, is that correct?
Yeah, Sergeant Shields, he manages all that. I don't have my own Facebook page. I don't tweet. And so we got Jeff, and Jeff does a great job.
Yeah, well, there you go. So you can follow the Cobourg Police Service at Cobourg Police if you want to follow them on Twitter. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back after these few messages with more of our interview with Paul Van de Graaff. You're listening to Consider This here on Northumberland 89.7. It's the Drive Time.
Hometown Bingo is your community connection for fun and excitement 7 days a week.
Tuesday, March 17th, it's St. Patrick's Day.
When you bingo, if I-17 is on your winning card, receive an extra $25 Hometown Bingo Bucks. If you bingo on I-17, you will receive a total of $50 in Hometown Bingo Bucks.
Hometown Bingo in Colburn, 884 Division Street, just south of Elgin on the east side. And check out their website at hometownbingo.ca.
Jim McGrath understands that as much as we don't want to talk about it, wills and estate planning is a responsible thing to do for you and your family. With his help, you can reflect on your values and wishes and have a legal direction to let others know what kind of health and personal care you would want if you could not speak for yourself. Jim McGrath has been a lawyer for over 30 years, and he understands the law, so you don't have to. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones to call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999.
For over 25 years, Pritchard's Climate Care has been your personal climate expert in the Northumberland area. Pritchard's offers complete heating and air conditioning service and repair for your home or business. We make sure the air you breathe is healthy and comfortable. Pritchard's Climate Care has been one of Southern Ontario's most trusted installers of heating and air conditioning products. Sign up for our We Care maintenance plans and get your furnace service for half off our regular special price. Pritchard's Climate Care. We're not just your climate experts, we're your neighbors. Call us at 905-885-8216 today.
You've gone and done it again. You agreed to plan your company's dinner party. Where will you hold it this year? Of course, there's nowhere better to hold large events than at the Legion Hall in Colburn. Hold your receptions and private parties at the Legion Hall, and you can get them catered. Call Shelley at 905-372-6554 and book the Legion for your event today. And call Sue at 905-342-2087 for catering.
The Royal Canadian Legion Branch 133 is located at 136 Orr Street in Cobourg. Call 905-372-2231 and become a member today.
That does not sound good.
I know. And who are you?
I'm the Midas Touch, and I think you need me.
It's that bad?
Not for long. Head to Midas for a comprehensive brake system evaluation, and if needed, we can install brake pads and shoes that come with a lifetime guarantee. How's that sound?
Like sound advice?
Nice one.
Visit Midas at 6 Strathy Road in Cobourg for great customer service from licensed Midas mechanics. For details, give them a call at 905-372-1959.
Trust the Midas Touch.
Welcome back to the show. Thank you, audience. And we got about 10 minutes left with Deputy Chief Van de Graaff. So, Rob.
Yeah, I was interested. One of the things that is mentioned in the report is the development of local expertise to investigate internet-related crimes. I know this is an emerging area.
Sure.
Could you talk a bit about what's going on here locally then?
Yeah, sure. Cybercrime is something that's it is the new thing, right? For sure. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to make sure that we're staying current. We know that the youth are using Facebook and various social media and the bullying issues and all sorts of tragic circumstances as a result of that. So we're trying to make sure that we're addressing those things as best we can. We also know that people in criminal enterprise use texts and emails and stuff like that. So we're looking at Port Hope, and that's where we go back to the partnership with Port Hope. Port Hope has a trained forensic computer IT guy. So we're buying certain technologies that our officers can use, but we're going to rely on the resources of the Port Hope Police Service and assisting us in any of that. But we want to make sure we're staying current with the child exploitation, the internet exploitation, as well as all the bullying and cyberbullying and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So to have a business plan for 3 years not discuss cybercrime, it's just gross. There's a big hole in the product, right?
Well, you know, when you get a TV show on CTV, you know, CASI cyber, then you know it's something that's a –
That's right. The new CSI show. Yeah. That's right.
Anyway, the other thing I was curious about too is do you talk in here about the drug enforcement enhancing the drug enforcement capacity at the service? Could you talk a bit about that and what that involves? Because it's not something that we hear a lot about of drugs.
Again, what we can't do is we can't work in isolation. And the Cobourg Police Service isn't big in the sense of a big service with a big unit here and a big traffic unit there. And so to enhance we have to train appropriately. We have to partner with partner agencies, which means the Criminal Investigative Service of Ontario, Intelligence Service of Ontario, sorry, Port Hope Police and the OPP. And that's that creating that partnership between the shoulder flashes that our criminals don't know boundaries, nor do we. So we're enhancing that. We're training better. We're developing and adhering some of our – or putting some of our budget towards drug enforcement. And as far as intelligence gathering, we're going to work strongly with this, with our partners as well as our addictions people. We recognize that there's the drug enforcement piece, but there's also the drug treatment piece. And we have to get in well with what the addiction issues are in this community and in the area. And then from that, we'll move forward.
I know that you had a lot of experience with that back in Belleville when you were working with there. How does it compare between the two places?
Well, Belleville was a larger service, and they had a drug unit, if you will. And I don't know what the situation here in Coburg is yet, and time will tell. But we've dedicated some officers to drug work before creating a drug unit. So we'll see. I think what this community will determine what the issue is, whether it's medicinal prescription drugs or whether it's illicit drugs in the sense of marijuana, crack, cocaine, heroin, whatever mm-hmm. the issue is of the day. But what we're doing is we're working with our partners. We're sharing the load. So the Coburg officer may be in Port Hope for a week working on something there, but then you might see a Port Hope officer, an OPP officer, a Belleville mm-hmm. officer working on a program here. And all I'm saying is that we're going to enhance our drug enforcement abilities through partnership building, but we're also going to look at drug treatment.
Great.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you for being here.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a great invite.
Hopefully we'll have you here on another time. One last thing. What do we think Coburg Police Service is going to look 3 years down the road after this is...
I think you're going to find a police service as it is now, a police service that's reflective of the community to which it serves. It's going to be accountable to its citizenry, to its council, and to the membership. And I believe you're going to have a truly engaged team built on community safety.
Fantastic. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks very much.
My guest has been Deputy Chief Paul Vandegraaff of the Coburg Police Service. I want to thank him for being here again. And maybe one day we'll get the chief in, Chief Lou, I'm sure. But he's a busy guy too, right?
I mean, you guys are let me know when you need him here. All right, we'll hijack him and bring him here.
We will hijack him and bring him in here. Thanks again for tuning in. We're going to play a quick track for you. Here's the Little River Band. Here's Reminiscing here on Northumberland 89.7. And welcome back to the show, everybody. With me still, Rob Washburn. He's the professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. That was a great interview, by the way.
What a fantastic deputy chief we've got. He's just a really articulate, thoughtful man, and they've done quite the job on that three-year business plan. It's going to be interesting to see how things are going to change within the community and within the force over the next couple of years, because it's the landscape's so different now than mm-hmm. it has been in the past.
Now, do you think the legacy of our previous chiefs is really something that we can be proud of as well? I mean, we had a police service that was spiraling out in terms of costs. It just kept going up and up and up and up. And then Chief Sweet sort of brought that under control with a lot of the work that they did at the stations.
Yeah, I think that whole period where there was all the amalgamation talks and there was a big push on for OPP and costings and all that stuff was going on about 10 years ago. And mm-hmm. and I agree with you. I mean, there was the change in paradigm took place under Chief Sweet, and he definitely got the budgets under control and brought some stability. And then there's been a rollover in the officers a very fine police force got to a certain age and had to retire. Mm-hmm. And so the new people have been coming in. And I think, under the current chief and now the new deputy chief, I think we're looking at a new era, definitely. And I think this is why this plan is such a critical document for us. And people, need to spend time looking at it and understanding what's going on with the force, because we are a small town, and we are very lucky to have a police force that is dedicated to us, because so many municipalities went mm-hmm. with the OPP, and I know they're just regretting it, So mm-hmm. It's
well,
good.
So many, and of course we could be worse. I mean, we could be Tabor, Alberta, where they've just introduced really bizarre sort of draconian bylaws with regards to public assembly and all of these other things. And they're going to be challenged in the charter, of course. But I was glad to hear from him that we're not heading down that road.
Well, it's a political path more than it is, I think, one that the police stake.
Well, speaking of political paths, you and I were fortunate enough to attend the Stand Up for Healthcare all-public meeting that was held in Port Hope at the Carpenters Union. Now, we only had about 35 people, 40 if you include the speakers, but we had about 35 people in attendance. And, I mean, there were a lot of people there that were unaffiliated. And I say that because we had a – there were a group there from, you know – the Liberals had a few people there, and I know the NDP had a couple of Russ Christensen was there. I don't know that we had anyone from the governing from the federal government anyway.
Not
from
that
the Conservatives,
I recognize,
but
no.
Some pushback though. I understand your what kind of response have you had thus far? Have you spoken to anyone who attended or heard anything?
No, I haven't. I certainly was part of my column this week in the newspaper. And, you know, I think that I haven't heard anything directly. There was a little bit of chatter on social media about it. But as far as anything direct, I haven't heard anything. It's been interesting because in the last couple of days since I wrote the column, which I do on the weekends, there was a piece that came out at the beginning of the week talking about a citizen engagement initiative, which is, I think, part of what Saturday was about was trying to get people engaged in this issue. And certainly that was the intent of my column, was to mobilize individuals and get people talking about this, because this is such a critical institution in our community. And then we see coming out of the hospital that they're going to start a citizen engagement process as well. And then there was a piece in the paper today about monies flowing down to the Lynns, about $8 million to our Lynn. So it'll be interesting to see how that gets divvied up and where it ends up. Is it going to help alleviate some of these budget woes that we're facing, or where is it going to be allotted? And of course, that's the critical piece.
Mm-hmm. Well, the message in your piece was titled "Message to the Lynn: It's our hospital, not yours." Do you think they got the message?
I don't know. I don't know, but I hope so. I think, you know, when you think about literally the millions of dollars that this community has raised, the people have generously donated, the tens of thousands of hours of volunteers put in. I mean, you know, I think it's important that the bureaucrats don't lose sight of the fact that, you know, while they are making budget decisions and they're trying to set forward an agenda, that this community has a massive investment, both literally and figuratively, into that hospital, and voices need to be heard.
Well, one of the last things you say in your piece is, if the 60,000 residents who use Northumberland Hills Hospital don't want to lose it, now is the time to act. To wait until the operational review is done will be far too late, and it's going to take more than a few picket lines. The Lynn must be made to shake in its boots in order to back off. And this level of accountability desperately is needed. Besides, with the millions of dollars people have donated to the hospital alongside with the thousands of hours, as you just said a moment ago, the Lynn must really get a clear message that it is our hospital and not theirs. Now, I know there's been some pushback from the Lynns, not just our Central East Lynn, but the other Lynns across the province. They don't seem to really appreciate it when people get involved in what they consider their business. But really, it is our business, isn't it?
Well, I think from the standpoint of, you know, yes, they have public meetings that we can attend. They don't happen in our community. They happen all over. Now, some of them do take place in Northumberland. I don't know how many. I haven't had a chance to go through all the agendas to find out just how many. But these meetings, you can go and attend. But the thing is, you only get observer status. So you can't go and make a deputation and that kind of thing. So it's kind of like Queen's Park. You know, you can go and watch the MPs go on, but you don't get to speak while they're speaking. However, the difference is that we have elected officials, people who are voted in by us, and we can go and hold them accountable. The thing is, we don't vote for the boards of the Lynn. They are appointees. And right now, we don't have a representative from Northumberland on that board. And even when we did, there's no mechanism for accountability. They don't have to stand up and report back to the community. They just simply, quote unquote, represent us. And I don't know how democratic that is, or if that's a really good process. But certainly, you know, you take other institutions like the school board. We elect school board trustees. So off they go. And if we have a problem, we can go to our trustee and, you know, and there's a level of accountability. Just doesn't happen. And the other thing that I think is very secretive about this process is that the board, over these last set of changes, has been meeting on its own. And these are not public meetings that are taking place. We don't get to hear the debates. We don't get to hear the proposals. These people are coming down, the Lynn's coming down and saying, here's what, you know, we're going to try and do. And our administrators and our board members, they're struggling. Now, sure, we get to elect a member of the board of the hospital. But, you know, these people, how can they possibly speak out on any of this, even the administrator. How is she supposed to speak out about this? Because mm-hmm. the moment they say one thing, I mean, I can't imagine what the political backlash would be to these people. What retribution would there be to the community? So we really need to have a community voice. And that's really, I was hoping, and I know on Saturday you were with me at the meeting, there was this really clarion call that we need to mobilize as a community and start talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I said at the beginning of the column, you know, I was talking to somebody and they were very upset. And all of a sudden they dropped their voice and they said, you know, I'd hate to see it be that, you know, is it going to take somebody showing up at the door and the door is locked and it's shuttered? Now, I think we're a long way from that right at the moment. But certainly, you know, you watch what's going on at Trenton. They're talking about reduced emergency hours. Mm-hmm. You look at Leamington, they've lost their obstetrics unit
birthing center, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and when you think about, what was that one story we heard about the woman 400 kilometers away? You know, she's being released from the hospital and the only place they could find for her to go mm-hmm. into that had long-term care was 400 mm-hmm. kilometers. That's 4-hour drive from your family and friends,
mm-hmm.
and you know, this is where you're getting put out now.
That's where the yeah. rules sort of gone a little hinky there, because you know they're not supposed to release anyone unless they have a place to go.
Yeah.
Basically what they're saying is, well, you know, the places you want to go to are full. Here's the closest place. By the way, you got to go now, which means you're gone. You're 400 miles away from your family, from friends. Not to mention the fact that you're still recovering from whatever it was you were in the hospital for in the first place. So it just doesn't seem to be a very patient-oriented health service we have. We have a health service, unfortunately, and this is what's happening, folks. The cuts have been coming since the late 80s and early 90s. And what we're seeing is a health service that's more focused on the bottom line than on making people healthy.
Well, and let's be really clear. I mean, these stories that we were hearing on Saturday were mm-hmm. from people who represent the province, and they weren't in our community. I mean, you know, and obviously they talk about stories that are very dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what it does tell us is that there are radical changes going on within healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And if people don't get up and start listening about this and discussing it and talking about it, more than just grousing, but actually having positive, actionable discussions, you know, things are going to change considerably, and mm-hmm. and we're not going to have anything to say about it.
Well, that was one of the things that I took away from the event on Saturday, was there was a lot of grousing. There was a lot of people saying, this is a problem. But I didn't hear a lot of solutions. I didn't hear one person say, well, you know, we need to do this, or maybe we should move service from this style to this style, or find some other way of accommodating whatever the financial parameters are. We didn't hear any of that. All we heard was a lot about was the fact that cuts, and they're going to affect us. But nobody was really talking about, at least not that I heard, about how we can come up with real solutions. And one of the things that we did lose at our hospital, which quite frankly I think was a big mistake, was the fast track for emergency. I mean, we have a lot of people, because they don't have family doctors or because they can't get an appointment to their doctor when they're sick, they don't have a choice but to go to the hospital. And so, you know, with fast track, at least you could go in there. If it wasn't a quote-unquote, you know, blood spewing out of your body emergency, you could go to the fast track and they could make a quick determination of what you need, what are the services you need, and you were moved through. Now, there's no fast track. So now we've got people that are really only looking for perhaps a prescription fill, or maybe just have something look at because they got a twinge. Now they're waiting 5-6 hours in emergency to be seen by someone and getting bumped to the back of the line every time another emergency comes to the fore.
Well, and part of the problem, I think, too, is we've got a lot of services in this community,
mm-hmm.
but it's getting all those pieces to fit and to mesh together properly. You know, why do we have such a terrible problem with acute care beds and people staying in too long? It's because we don't have a place for them to go that works, or, you know, people don't know who to phone or where to go or
mm-hmm.
where to get services or how to get help. You know, that PATH program that's been so innovative with the seniors, that funding's going to end in September. You know, there's no talk about, you know, whether or not we're going to get further funding and how mm-hmm. successful that's been. But that was all part of that idea of trying to get things to mesh. One of the things, though, Dave, that was really interesting, and just to follow up on what Deputy Chief Vandergraaf was saying, was, isn't it fascinating that there's another report of, and we've done several interviews with this, where mental health issues are in the report. I mean, the policing, the United Way report.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that we keep coming back to mental health as being something critical. And I wonder what it's going to take before we actually get something actionable on this issue, or who's going to be the leader that's going to start to take and really deal with this? Because obviously the community keeps identifying this as something that they're concerned mm-hmm. about. Institutions and organizations are identifying this, and yet we can't seem to get those pieces to come together.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of it has to come down to cost. It really is. That's the big factor here for any provincial government, whether it's Ontario, Alberta, New Brunswick, PEI, which has a much smaller population than we do. I know they're going through some really incredible difficulties with their healthcare service. But I come back to the point that I raised at the meeting, which was, why are our provincial governments not borrowing the money they need to provide these integral services from the Bank of Canada? And I mean, every time I bring this up, people say, oh, you just want the government to print more money. But what we're talking about here is accessibility and accessible funding, rather, that is not going to strangle us with interest costs. I mean, we know that in the province of Ontario, $18 billion a year, $18 billion with a B, listeners, is spent on interest, on just maintaining the debt that we currently have to private institutions. And that is debt that before 1974 never would have existed. I mean, it shouldn't take a hammer blow to the head for people to realize that, you know, it's been wonderful using the private banks for the last 40 years, but guess what? It's a failed experiment. It's not working. It's not in the public's best interest.
Well, and certainly on a provincial level, on a federal level, these are steps that have to be taken and taken seriously. On a local level, though, I think that there's just this screaming message in my mind that, you know, mental health is a serious issue. And I know we've been taking steps and things are being improved little by little. But I think, you know, it's one of those things where we almost need like a mental health summit or something like this, mm-hmm. where municipal leaders, hospital leaders, institutional leaders are coming together and saying, here's the grocery list, here's what we need, and here's how we think we can start to deal with it. And then some, you know, Lou or whoever is elected in the next election comes forward and says, okay, here are the tools to fund that, and let's get it done. Because mm-hmm. I don't think we can cobble along anymore. It's just, I think it's going to be something that's going to bite us in the back before too long.
Well, absolutely, because we've seen an increase in extreme care, and we've seen the calls increase. The deputy chief referred to it as well. And what he said also, which sort of piqued my attention, was the fact that, you know, a couple of decades ago, the majority of these people would have been in some form of care facility, mm-hmm. whether it was Darcy Place here in town or any of the other facilities, which were all closed due to cutbacks by the provincial government in an effort to balance the budget. So it does beg the question, you know, when is a balanced budget more important than the well-being and development of the citizens for whom you're tasked to provide the services?
Well, and they said at the time, and I remember covering this so clearly, they said, you know, by putting people back in the community, it was going to be better for them. Well, that experiment has failed now. Mm-hmm. We've had 25 years of that. Now it's time to move on.
Absolutely. Well, that's going to bring it to a close here on Consider This Live. This has been our Wednesday edition of The Drive Time. I want to thank my guest, Rob Washburn, for being here, and Deputy Chief Paul Vandegraaff. Also want to thank Teresa Rickerby for calling in, and all my callers today. Ed White, thank you so much for calling in. And we'll be back tomorrow. It is Thursday the 11th, or 12th rather, tomorrow, and we'll have more of great entertainment, great talk for you as well. If you have an idea or a comment for our show, please give us a call anytime at 905-372-2321, or send me a tweet at Legant66, that's LEGANT66, or you can follow Rob Washburn on Twitter as well. He is R-Wash. There you go, R-Wash. Thank you very much. Here is The Bells, Moody Manitoba, and it's good night here from Northumberland 89.7. I'm Dave Glover. Thanks for tuning into The Drive Time. Prairie town afternoon.